Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Patrick Come Lately Talk Radio. This is Stefan, your host, British by birth, American by choice. The Founding Fathers crafted some remarkable documents that led to the creation of a great country founded on liberty and self-reliance. I have lived in the Euro-socialist nightmare, and I am doing what I can to return this country to the vision that the Founding Fathers gave us. We need to strive to rebuild that shining city on the hill, for without us, the world has nowhere to turn for freedom. For the next hour, I will be presenting news, views, and guests that help keep the true spirit of America alive. And this is Stefan, your Patriot Come Lately, wishing you all good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you're listening to the show from, or whenever you're listening to the show, whether you're listening live and in our chat room, whether you're listening to the rebroadcast on Red State Talk Radio, or whether you're listening to the archives. My thanks to all of my audience for joining me for episode 160. And just quickly, WVG and Mary already in the chat room there, so hello to them. And I do have to say, once again, thank you to my listeners. We are now in the month of April. That means the numbers for the month of March have just been released. And I'm very pleased to say that I was able to break the 6,500 listeners again for the month of March. I announced last month that I did that for the first time in February, but managed to crack that number again. Also, on the Red State Talk Radio Network, I managed to be in the top five most listened shows again, this time coming in actually at number three. You know, top five is good, but to be at number three, that's I'm really proud of that. Just behind my good friend Diane Student of Freedom's Wings, and number one is the owner and operator of the network, who does an awful lot of work, really good guy, Primo Mondoni, and he has his own show with Ken Brown called Red State Town Hall Program. So good place to get lots of good conservative hosts, Red State Talk Radio Network at redstatetalkradio.com. So congratulations to both of them and the others that are in that top five. I have to say that I'm both proud and humbled to be reaching so many people. But, you know, it's the knowledge that this number of people are there, making it worthwhile, and that's and it also makes it so much more fun to do. Have one main topic on the show tonight. My regular listeners will know I like to read. And when I find interesting books, I like to share them with you, usually through an interview with the author on the show. In this next case, I recently read another book in the liberty genre, but the author told me he does not do interviews. So I'm going to do a review, and he's given me permission to read an excerpt, and I hope you like the part that I've chosen. This book, titled Dominatus, was written by D.W. Ulsterman of the famous blog The Ulsterman Report. TheUlstermanReport.com is the website. So if you've ever been to that site, you know he has people like the White House Insider, the Republican Insider, the Wall Street Insider, who give him all sorts of information. But he's also written a fiction book. The book is set in the future, roughly, only, I should say, 24 years ahead, so 2037. It's the story about an enclave of liberty, established in Alaska after the United States basically ceases to exist when it is subsumed by the new United Nations. Head of this region of the New World Order is a consul by the name of, you guessed it, Barack Obama. the U.S. Constitution, the U.S. flag, music, smoking, drinking are all pretty much forbidden by new United Nations mandates. These mandates are enforced by compliance officers, and people cited for breaking them are removed to education facilities without trial. Education facilities being the new name, obviously, for prison. And notice, we don't have laws anymore in that dark future. We have mandates. So it's just basically bureaucrats setting up rules and regulations, no more constitution, no more laws. These mandates are enforced by compliance officers. A group of liberty lovers set up a small settlement in Alaska. They saw the writing on the wall, and part of the story is there's a person who buys a large piece of land in Alaska to set up this settlement, and they try to live their own lives as they wish, obviously without affecting people outside of their settlement, and especially not affecting the new United Nations government either. They just want to live their own peaceable life and just be ignored by everybody. Up to the time that the book starts, they have managed to escape any direct action by the powers that be, although other similar enclaves had been eradicated one by one. As one of the last holdouts, they're really like a tinderbox, waiting for a spark to start the fire. And at the beginning of the book, that spark arrives in the form of Rhys Neeson. As you read the book, you'll find out that he's the son of someone who was on the outside, who had been helping people to get to this village, Dominatus. And by the way, for those of you that speak that don't speak Latin, you can still guess what it means. It means dominance, tyranny, etc. It's an inside joke. Read the book to find out why. So Reese's father, before being killed by the regime through an unknown virulent strain of cancer, suggested to Reese that he should come and visit the people here in Dominatus while the founder of that group, known as the Old Man, is still alive. Now, Reese, In the lower 48, as Alaskans like to call the rest of the United States, Rhys had been broadcasting a program of liberty ideas, not via the internet, because that had been shut down very early on by the new United Nations, but by shortwave broadcasting. And he intends to broadcast a show about the village. So he comes up and starts interviewing people. Of course, his trip to the village has been followed by the regime. They're absolutely aware of him and his visit to the settlement, even though he tries carefully. He doesn't keep it completely hidden, but he also doesn't do it very brazenly in terms of getting up there. So shortly after his arrival, the local compliance officer drives over to interrogate Rhys, or even take him back to their offices back in Anchorage. The day-to-day leader of the village, a guy called Mac, ends up forcibly evicting the compliance officer from the tavern that Mac runs, which is illegal because people there smoke, they wear weapons, they're drinking, and that, of course, is fuel thrown on the fire. From there, everything goes downhill. Ulsterman manages to weave a number of side stories into the basic premise of the book, and he illuminates the characters that have gathered at this last outpost of liberty. The characters are warm and believable. No real Superman amongst them. Yet some of them with the fortitude that many of us would hope to have when push comes to shove. Amongst the bad guys that they come up against, they also have bullies, as to be expected in any government organization responsible for dishing out force. But most of those on the wrong side of the fence appear to have ended up there without really choosing, just doing it as a job and trying to ignore the worst excesses perpetrated by the bullies. In other words, basically they're cowards, which is very typical for those sort of things. In a way, this book is a very sad story. It shows how easily you can extrapolate what is going on today and end up in a very, very bad situation. Most of the books that authors that I've interviewed over the last couple of years have a similar theme. At least the fiction books have almost all been similar theme of big government gone wild and then people standing up against them. And Alsterman has done a very good of describing how we could get from where we are today to the very bad environment of the book. That's one of the good things. I think he doesn't just jump in. Some of the other books, basically how we got there is really assumed or it's not described. But Alsterman shows a little bit more how we ended up there. I think that's due to the research that he does for his political news blog, the Alsterman Report. So he obviously has a handle where things are going or might be going. But sad as the story is, there is a message of hope that resounds through the book. It shows how, even as storm clouds gather around, a group of people can get together and build their own destiny, living free and happy, even knowing that their way of life can also be the cause of their annihilation. So, as you can guess, I recommend the book. I've interviewed a number of authors, as I said, over the last few months especially. In fact, sometimes I wonder whether I should change the name of the program to the Liberty Book Club because I've got so many books. But it is nice to bring these authors in. I have to say, I think D.W. Alsterman ranks up there amongst the best. I'm not going to pick a favorite. But he's definitely up there amongst the top ones. A great story, and he is going to be writing a second book, and that should come out. He's trying to get it out round about July 4th, which is, of course, a good date to do that. As positive as I am, maybe just a small little nitpick here. The book and story are great. Here and there, I found some of the editing not to be too good. Not so much the content or the words, but small things like spelling Thomas Paine without the E, so it, you know, as in hurting, pain. So hopefully for his next book, this has been a great success, and hopefully Alsterman can employ a professional editor. Or if he did use an editor, get a better one. But other than that, I mean, it's still a great, great read, and as I said earlier, a little bit of an uplifting story. Now, I've been permitted by Mr. Alsterman to read an excerpt, and I would like to do that shortly. But before I go to that, one final kind of issue I want to bring up. I have been following Alsterman's blog, but one thing struck me after reading his book. He's proven to be such an able writer. I kind of have to say, it does raise a little bit of a question for me where the key characters in his blog come from. Are they truly real people? Just figments of his proven active imagination? Because the book is great. So is he doing the same in the blog? I'm sure he would say not. And obviously he can't. It's going to be difficult to prove because the people have to remain anonymous. I don't know, perhaps they're composite figures called together from many contexts that the author may have in D.C. and New York. Or perhaps they are really individuals, as described, shadowy figures lurking in their respective environments. I doubt that we'll ever know for certain, and for me it doesn't matter. Either way, both the blog and the book are definitely entertaining reading. And if you haven't been there before, it is the ulstermanreport.com. If you type in the Alsterman Report as one word in Google, very easy to find because it is a very popular site, so it ranks high. So, as I said, I'm going to start reading the excerpt. We will take a break in the middle, perhaps for the commercials. But I would like to start. And the scene that this excerpt comes from, the villagers have been attacked by the new United Nations forces. They had built a cave, kind of ready for this day, which was supplied with food, had very strong entrance protection, etc., had a kind of a remote control machine gun outside. And the new United Nations forces, after trying to approach on foot and getting shot by this remote control gun, are actually sending in drones. Sound familiar? Let's tell Rand Paul about that. Sending in drones, armed drones, trying to break down these very heavy gates that have been built. And in the book, I think they described a little bit like the ones that you can find at Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado, where they have the protection for atomic blasts. It's so very strong gates. In the cave, there is a shortwave transmitter that had been set up for various reasons, and Reese Neeson uses the shortwave transmitter to air another one of his broadcasts, and the first one from Dominatus. And I want to quote his speech from the book. Just a quick look there and just a quick hi. Before I start reading this, I see another one of my author friends, good friend, I like to call him. Edward is there. Mary, of course, John Hancock, an author of nonfiction books, Minnesota Girl, Smoke in Texas as well. So hello to all of you as well, and thanks for joining me. So the Reese Neeson broadcast to the world outside from Dominatus. For some 5 years, I have spoken with all of you about the challenges of attempting to live, let's call it a reasonable life, under this yoke of oppression. This oppression comes primarily in the form of the new United Nations, that organization initiated almost 20 years ago that replaced both in sense and spirit what was once the United States of America. The United States of America, what President Ronald Reagan called the shining city upon a hill, the beacon of light and hope for all the pilgrims of the world trying to make their way home. I tell you now, listeners, though that light has grown dim, it has not gone out. That spirit, that American spirit, established and then honored in the blood of ultimate sacrifice, remains within each of us, who know what the world we live in now is a world gone wrong. Who among you is satisfied with this tyranny? Who among you feels it is right that the government dictates every waking moment of your life? Who among you welcomes your own children into a world where opportunity is limited to what some new United Nations bureaucrat is willing to dispense to them? A world where the past, present, and future of what was once America must now bend to the will of people who for so long wished to do it, and you, harm. So then, what are we to do? Ask that question of yourselves. And then listen to the answer. It speaks to you. It whispers in the voice of generations past. Citizens of a nation who live not under the boot of this new United Nations, but rather under the freedoms and opportunities of a United States of America. Their legacy, their sacrifice, answers that question for you. Listen to them. Listen to their answer. Thomas Paine once said, "If there must be trouble, let it be in my day, that my child may have peace." Ladies and gentlemen, that day is now. There must be trouble so that our children may have peace. This oppression cannot be allowed. I ask you, rise up. I ask you to again walk the road of freedom and opportunity and liberty, a road paved in the sacrifice of those who fought and died to protect it. I have made a trip recently, one that brought me to a place known as Dominatus. It is an ironic name, given the people of this place are living in direct opposition to that term. A bit of an inside joke, if you will. Perhaps some of you have heard of it, this place in the wilderness of Alaska. Over the years, people have chosen to come here in order to live their own lives, to be able to experience what America once was. They build their homes, their own businesses. They eat and drink what they want. Some choose to smoke. They laugh and cry, dance and sing. If they choose to arm themselves for protection, they do so, all without the thought to whether or not they are obeying the tyranny of the new United Nations mandates. And I'm going to take a short break now. Apologies to the author, but unfortunately we do need to, as I say, pay the rent. So I will be back after these messages.
It's the Conservative Underground from beautiful Broadcast Park in the Post Studio A. I'm Doc White with this week's Conservative Minute. I'm convinced that a significant number of Americans, call them the low-maintenance voters, simply do not care what President Obama does while in office. Obama goes around ball-batting the rich and successful, then lives like a guest on Robin Leach's Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. Obama attends Easter services at a church where a radical pastor from the pulpit said conservatives want to put blacks back in the back of the bus. Meanwhile, the country's falling apart. He doesn't propose anything new, simply blames others, and only offers platitudes as solutions to our problems. I think most people just laugh at Obama, knowing that it can't get any worse, so why care? Well, apathy is a tragedy of free people, and usually the precursor to tyranny. I'm Doc White, host of the Conservative Underground. Download for free at Podomatic.com and listen at RedStateTalkRadio.com. The Conservative Underground.
I will never forget the day my son Jeremy told me he hated me and slammed the door in my face. I'm behavioral therapist Janet Lehman. Behavior problems can turn the child you love and your life into a nightmare. That's why my husband James and I created the Total Transformation, the step-by-step program that shows you how to fix the worst behavior problems and get your child to respect and listen to you again. No matter what the behavior, defiance, backtalk, angry outbursts, disrespect, we can help you stop it. Now you can get the Total Transformation for free. All you need to do is get the program and let us know how it works for you. You can keep it forever for free.
Limited number of free programs available. Call now 1-800-259-1409, 1-800-259-1409. 1-800-259-1409. That's 1-800-259-1409.
This is Patrick Cumlately Talk Radio, keeping the spirit of America alive. A proud member of the Red State Talk Radio Network. And thank you for sticking with me through that break. I am currently reading an excerpt from D.W. Ulsterman's great book called Dominatus, and I'm reading from the speech of Rhys Neeson, if you like, the hero or one of the heroes of the book, and he's broadcasting to the nation and the world from Dominatus, where they are under attack from the bad guys. And he was talking about the village, the settlement of Dominatus before the break. So let me continue with the excerpt and the speech. He says, "This little community of people simply wanted freedom, liberty, to be left alone. And for that, simply wanting those things that are no more and no less than the foundation of which the United States of America was built upon, they are deemed dangerous to the government of the new United Nations. These people now face termination. Dominatus has been visited by the compliance officers, and then by the special operations officers, and finally, repeated visits by the drones and their bombs. How is it so many people now allow drone bombings to be carried out upon themselves by a government that promises its existence is based upon the premise of protecting them? The history of such bombings is well known. though of course the official history does not mention them. Waco, Texas, Grant County, Washington, so many others, and now Dominatus, Alaska. President Kennedy said that every nation must know, whether it wishes us well or ill, that we shall pay any price, bear any burden, meet any hardship, support any friend, oppose any foe, to assure the survival and the success of liberty. His words are now directed at this new United Nations listeners. The mandates have robbed every one of you of your liberty. So knowing that, please ask if you are now willing to pay any price, to bear any burden, to meet any hardship, to support any friend, and to oppose any foe, to assure that liberty is returned to you, its rightful owner. I'm asking all of you, I am told there are millions of you, to now, at this moment, stand as one to resist this false government of the new United Nations. This has never been a government of the people, by the people, or for the people, but rather a government of government, by government, for the government. Its only purpose is to feed its ever-growing powers, powers that come at the expense of your own personal liberties and freedoms. There was a time, listener, when people were not only granted the blessings of opportunity and personal responsibility in America, they were expected to fully embrace them to the best of their abilities. Those blessings were what attracted millions to journey to America's shores, to oftentimes risk life and limb for even a mere sliver of hope. Then, somewhere we rebuked those blessings. We turned our backs on opportunity and personal responsibility. Our schools dedicated themselves to teaching compliance at all times, to having no opinion that might make another among them feel uncomfortable. That government was always the source of good in the world, while the desire for success was the root of all evil. This was not the education of children, but rather the programming of children. And so it went, one generation into the next, until finally the system of checks and balances, the ideals of the free market, the limited government spirit of the Constitution, were viewed with contempt. Such things were deemed unsafe. There could be no winners in order that everyone could feel comfortable in the knowledge all were losers, dependent upon government for our own happiness. It was never happiness, though, now, was it? No, it was misery. The misery that always comes when a people accept tyranny in the hope of obtaining some small measure of safety. And as the saying goes, misery loves company, does it not? I asked you when it became acceptable for a people to accept its own government dropping drones on them. Let us walk that scenario back a bit further. I would also ask when a people found it acceptable for a government to tell them what foods they can eat or how much soda they're allowed to drink. When a government tells them how they are able to protect themselves from harm, often resulting in making them far more susceptible to potential harm. When did a people deem it acceptable to allow a government to take more than 50% of what they earn by their own labor, allow government to regulate every aspect of their business until it was impossible to comply, resulting in that business having to close its doors? When did it become acceptable to allow government officials to demand citizens give more and more and more, while those same officials wined and dined on vacations on tens of millions of dollars taken from the same taxpayers the government demanded yet more from? You see, listeners, the use of drones by government to kill its own citizens did not happen in a vacuum. It is a result of too many years where people simply ignored the theft of freedom and liberty that was occurring all around them. Years of politicians demanding obedience to laws created without understanding of a nation's past, but rather to further the goals of big government's intended future. A future that is now present in the here and now and demands every one of us to kneel before the mandates of the new United Nations. The sound of an M2 gun interrupted Reese's program, followed soon after by several bombs landing just outside the cave. The explosions again dimmed the lights as the walls of the communications room groaned under the strain. The door to the room opened, and Max stepped inside. "Sorry to interrupt you. We're all listening. Got a few more drones doing some business outside, but things are holding up well enough. Already shot one of them down. Keep doing your thing. Finish your talk." Mac closed the door as I again faced the microphone. I took a deep breath as quietly as I could before continuing. "Can you hear that, listeners? That's the sound of your government attempting to kill those who simply choose to live their lives in freedom, who choose to honor the memory of the United States of America. Drones are bombing us now, sent here by the new United Nations, sent here to kill women and children. And the men who served and defended a country and way of life that our collective ignorance and laziness allowed to be overtaken and destroyed. These people are really no different than you. They are doctors, accountants, bikers, students, former soldiers, mothers, fathers, sons, daughters, all brought together by a simple desire to work hard and to be left alone. That's it, listener, to work hard and to be left alone. And for that, the government, your government, would have them dead." Another series of explosions rocked the communications room. This time the lights went out completely for a brief moment before flickering back to life. The M2 gun was firing repeatedly now with no delay between rounds. George Washington once said that government is without reason, without eloquence, that it is at its most basic premise simple force, that it is like a fire, a dangerous servant and a fearful master. That fire has overcome all of us. It has burned down what was once the United States of America and left in its place the searing, destructive, and deadly heat of the new United Nations. When I was a child, no more than 10, I found myself in nearly constant conflict with a bully at school. He was taller than me, larger, stronger, and nearly every day his primary purpose seemed intent on making my life a hellish existence. Finally, I went to my teacher, Miss Foster, and explained what he was doing, the pushing, the shoving, the elbows to the ribs, stealing my property. I remember clearly what this teacher told me with a smile on her face, but eyes that looked back at me with cold disdain. She explained that this other student, this bully, had come from a difficult home, and that I should try to better understand that. She went on to point out, in the by then widely accepted politically correct language that almost all educators seem to show complete devotion to, that he was an African American, while I was white, and so that was even more reason for me to be more understanding of him, and that my attempt to get him in trouble was the cause of his distrust and dislike of me. Basically, I was being told that I was the problem. I was the reason this other person was pushing me down and taking my things. And apparently, all of the anti-bullying rhetoric of the school really only applied to a certain segment of the population, and certainly not to this other black student. I went home that day and told my parents. My father decided he would handle it in his own way, which was nothing more than him telling me that I had to decide if I was going to allow myself to be a victim. His words that day have remained with me ever since. "Son, you have to decide if you're going to stand up for yourself or let this other kid push you around. It's that simple. Sometimes in this world you have to fight fire with fire, because that's the only thing some people will understand. Don't worry about your teacher, this Miss Foster. She's an idiot. Unfortunately, so many of our schools today are in no short supply of idiots. Now, I'm not telling you to hate this other student. In fact, there's probably plenty about him to feel sorry for, mostly that he lives in a society that doesn't want to make him accountable for his own behavior, and someday, if he doesn't change, that's going to catch up to him, and it'll probably hurt him in a very bad way. But as far as what you can do, when it involves yourself and your property, you have a choice to make him accountable or not. Sometimes you just got to ball up your fist and smack him one as hard as you can. fire with fire. Now, after you do that, that teacher of yours or the principal, whatever, they might try to punish you for it. And that's okay too. Send your message to that other kid and then take the punishment. As a man, sometimes you have to be willing to make that choice. And this is your choice. I'm giving you my advice. My suggestion, you decide from here what you want to do about this. Well, I took my dad's advice. He spent an hour or so showing me how to throw a punch, an exercise my mom did not appear overly supportive of. And the next day, just outside the school entrance, there stood my bully waiting to torment me. He pushed me to the ground as he had done so many times before, but this time when I stood back up, my fist flew into the side of his face. I remember the odd feeling of my knuckles smashing into the soft, fleshy texture of his cheeks and the odd smacking sound that connection made. The bully's left hand began rubbing his face where I hit him, his eyes watering up in shock and pain. Then those eyes turned angry, and I knew I was in for a real fight. He grabbed me by my jacket, threw me to the ground again, his greater weight pinning me down as he attempted to choke me. I knew then I had better be willing to give as good as I got, to fight fire with fire, as my dad had explained to me. So I took both my hands and grabbed as much of his ample cheeks as I could and squeezed hard. I doubt you will find that particular technique in any professional fighter's arsenal of tricks, but the results were favorable. The bully let go of my throat as he screamed in pain, rolling off my chest and onto his back. By then, some of the school office staff were outside looking down at both of us. We were brought into the vice principal's office and asked what happened. To my surprise, before I was able to answer for myself, the bully spoke up to say that we had simply tripped outside and fallen to the ground. I was asked to confirm that version of things, and I did. I'm not sure why I did. Some kind of unspoken code by kids against authority figures, perhaps. I'm sure the vice principal didn't believe the story, but with both of us supporting the same lie, we were allowed to leave the office with no more requirement than to be more careful. Once outside, I feared the bully would quickly attempt to extract some revenge for his likely still painful cheeks, but instead he simply went his own way, leaving me to stand there and contemplate what he was really up to. In the days and weeks that followed, he continued to leave me alone and eventually would even nod his head in greeting as I passed him. By the time the school year was set to end, we were actually speaking to one another on a regular basis, and that summer he became a regular visitor to my home, where he would always rave about my mother's cooking and how crazy it was that my father kept so many books in his study. We became friends. He was never a particularly good student, but far more importantly, he was a remarkable human being. In fighting fire with fire, I found that his flame burned very similar to my own. Two young boys who shared the hopes and dreams of youth and the prospective possibilities of impending adulthood. His path was tougher, given the challenges of his family, but he seemed content to deal with that as best he could while remaining a trusted and reliable friend to me. By the time we graduated high school, the United States was already quickly descending into its merging with what became the new United Nations, and the world we knew as kids was fading into oblivion. I attended college while he enlisted in the military. Within a few years of that enlistment, I imagine he, like all members of the U.S. military at that time, was required to pledge his oath to the new United Nations and the great consulate, Barack Obama. And as I lost touch with my former friend, so did an entire people lose touch with their former country, the United States of America. My friend's name was Merrick. Merrick, if you're out there and you hear this message, ask yourself, if you were a friend or, once again, simply a bully, do you and other officers of the new United Nations question the authority that moves your hand to decimate so many lives? Are you providing security to the innocent or ensuring the continuation of tyranny? You were once, like America, my friend. Will I ever see my friend and country again? I let out a long sigh, this time not bothering to mask the sound from the microphone. The drones will continue to bomb us. For how long? None here know. I imagine until they finally destroy this structure and kill all of us inside it. And then, like so many others who have faced a similar fate at the hands of this government, we will be buried and forgotten. None will be allowed to speak of Dominatus for fear of facing the same punishment. And so the new United Nations will continue extracting every bit of freedom from your lives until none remains. But it doesn't have to be that way. Anyone with the desire to be free again and the will to fight for that freedom, whether you are a citizen or a soldier, can now stand up and do so. Rise up and be counted with us. And when Dominatus falls, as it likely will, continue that fight for yourself. Let this smoldering fire of resistance grow and spread to Anchorage, Seattle, Los Angeles, Denver, St. Louis, Houston, Chicago, Miami, New York, Washington, D.C., and across oceans to the rest of the world. In every city, every town, and every home, I pray that this time, you do not forget those who were silenced for nothing more than living lives of respectful liberty. Lives that followed the once valued traditions of America, that great shining city on the hill. Let our memories and the memories of those slain before us be the foundation for the rebuilding of that city, for the return of America. Don't allow Dominatus to die in vain. And that is where I'm going to stop. That's the end of his speech. It's not the end of the book, by the way. Some other things do happen. Like I said, it's a book I can heartily recommend it, especially if you have access to a Kindle or you want to read on your computer or your smartphone. Buy the Kindle version. I think it's only $3.99, so $4. Very cheap book, and I'm really looking forward to the next one. I'm way over my breaks, but I'm going to maybe forgo some of the commercials today. I'm going to play some music, and then we'll do a little bit of news and views to the end of the program. There's really only one song that I can play at this time, don't you think? And that's that great anthem for freedom, for liberty, from Ava Aston. Of course, that will be We the People.
you and me. Together we are united. Together we are strong. With one voice we'll stand up against everything that's wrong. Don't stand up, don't speak out. We've got a fight to get it back out of reach down. Yes, I see that this country's ours.
Freedom lovers, in a shocking turn of events, Democrat National Committee Chairwoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz, otherwise known as Scrunch Spray, has informed supporters in an email that they have, quote, spent everything they had to spend in 2012 to win the White House, add seats in the Senate, and pick up seats in the House. Our job was to do everything we could to elect President Obama and other Democrats across the country. We spent every last penny. The cardinal sin in campaigns is to sit on money, which is why we spent every last penny we had in 2012, and then some, to make sure the election went our way. Is it surprising to see that the Democrats who have offered up no real budget for the last 4 years and who have spent us into oblivion, adding over $6 trillion more dollars to our deficit, can't even keep their own committee in the black? I'm not sure the GOP would be much better. We need responsible government that represents we the people, that keeps to a budget and stops wasting money. You can tune in to the Freedom Swing Show Tuesdays and Thursdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time and Saturdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time at www.blogtalkradio.com/freedomswings. We also rebroadcast at redstatetalkradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Freedom Swings. Check us out on Facebook, The Freedom Swing Show. And our website, freedomswingspolitics.com, brings you up-to-date stories, analysis, wings gear, and much, much more.
This is Patrick Cumlately Talk Radio, coming to you live via the internet, via rebroadcast on WRSDB, the Red State Talk Radio Network, or from the recordings at archives.patrickcomelately.us. And this is Stefan, your Patrick Cumlately, back from that extended break. Hope you enjoyed the music there. I think that's really the only song that you could play after that powerful speech. And I chose that one out of the book. I think... because of everything in the book, that part very definitely is one that I see could apply today. You know, I can see that speech being one that ought to go out, and I'm going to ask D.W. Alsterman's permission to actually put that into kind of a regular thing every July 4th, because I think it's just such a powerful speech. And basically, let's all stand up and fight for freedom. We have to do that. Fight for liberty. So a great speech, and that's why I chose it. So thank you to Smokey in Texas for his for the nice comments about that speech. I'm glad it was enjoyed, and I think it was the right one. Of course, and like I said, the song, I think, perfect following that powerful speech, powerful song. Have another favor to ask of you. That very talented artist that sings that song, Ava Aston, is currently in a in a competition to try and win herself some money to basically be able to publish her next album, and she needs your votes. So if you can, if you're on Facebook, go to the Ava Army, search on the Ava Army, and you can get the details there of how to support her with your vote. It needs, basically what it needs is you to go in once a day to a site, log on there. You do have to sign up and then vote for Ava. Please do it. She's very deserving, obviously, with this song, and the song that she's put up for the competition isn't We the People, but it's another one which is dedicated to our military people, and it's about losing someone that you love, and also a very powerful song in of itself. So please go there. If you don't have Facebook, the place to go is vwall.com. That's V as in Victor, EEWALL.com, and then search for Ava Aston. That's Ava, A-V-A, Aston, A-S-T-O-N. Please go there and see if you can join the people that are voting for her. She really needs your votes. Okay, we're getting close to the end of the show. I hope you've enjoyed it. Next week, I'm trying to get one of my recent authors back, Todd Wood. You may remember he wrote sort of kind of a financial thriller, collapse of the US dollar, etc. And he actually contacted me and said he'd like to come back on the show and talk about what's been happening in Cyprus. And, you know, he knows the financial world, New York, etc. So I think we can get some very good insight from him. So we're trying to see whether or not he can make it next week or the week after. But in the near future, hope to get him on, so I hope that that he'll be there and we can get some background behind what's going on there. Hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please tell your friends. You know all the usual website, redstatetalkradio.com, archives.patriotcomelately.us. And, you know, please spread the word, and also spread the word about this book. Of course, also all the other books that I've reviewed and had the authors on, they're all good books. Just a bit of a shame that D.W. Osterman doesn't do interviews. I would have loved to have had him on, but, well, you know, that's his prerogative, and I was disappointed, but I understand if that's his you know, the way he wants to do things, that's fine. Now, he is bringing out a second book, so I'm going to be looking forward to that. But in the meanwhile, before then, I hope that my other author friend, Edward Reapy, is also working on another book, so we may be getting a bunch of new books coming out. So looking forward to those as well. Anyway, so folks, so we'll see next week, perhaps a little bit on Cyprus, maybe, maybe not. And I've got some other authors coming up, some other books that I've been reading. So I think month of April is going to be a fun month. So, you know, do stick with me, and please also let your friends know. And for those of you that are not listening live but would like to comment on tonight's show, feel free to send me an email, Stefan@patriotcomelately.us. Patriot Come Lately, obviously, one word. I would be glad to, I'm very happy to get your emails, and if I can, I will always reply to them, both with an email, but also a lot of the time take what you've said in your email and also bring it into one of the programs. So, folks, this is the end of the show. It's time for the music to start. Thanks a lot for being with me. As I like to say, ta-ta for now, and please join me next week. Thanks a lot, folks. Good night. Thank you for listening to the show. I hope that you enjoyed tonight's topics. Whether you listened live, to a recording, or to a rebroadcast, I appreciate the time you share with me. We need to spread the message of liberty far and wide, so please tell your friends and family about the show. Thank you for helping to keep the beacon of hope burning. This is Stefan, your Patriot Come Lately, signing off. God bless America, and remember, L3, long live liberty.